Tux Newsom Salama, thank you and welcome to Juno Afternoon from community-supported KTOO. I'm Boston Christopher. You may also join us via our live stream on YouTube at ktoo.org/JPMLive or on KTOO's Instagram and Facebook pages. On the show today, Friday, November 14th, 2025, it's Alaska National Philanthropy Day. We talk with Amy Skillbred from the Juno Community Foundation about what that is and how you can participate. Plus, you'll have updates on grant deadlines and info on the Feeding Juno Kids campaign. The Salvation Army is here with info on their holiday campaigns, including Thanksgiving dinner, the Angel Tree program, Christmas food boxes, and of course, the Red Kettle campaign. Mudroom's Taylor Beard is here with info on this weekend's workshop on stage presence and more info on favorite storytelling events that are coming up in the new year. Plus, we have the story on the closing of the beloved Zerelda's Bistro from KTOO reporter Yvonne Crumry. That's coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansengress.com/careers. Support comes from Nugget Alaskan Outfitter, with outdoor clothing, gear, and footwear for the whole family. Now carrying women's workwear from Dovetail and Aloe Yoga Pants. Located in the Mendenhall Mall and online at nuggetoutfitter.com.
You are listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Keishi Bessie Cooley. And the word this week is chai.
Chai.
That means yellow cedar. And here's a sentence. They made a spoon with yellow cedar. Let's hear it again. Yellow cedar. Gunas Chish to Hune Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Keishi Bessie Cooley is Kokhetan and a child of a Yenyedi man. She is from Daisleen, Teslin, and grew up spending time in Teslin and around Teslin Lake. She earned a master's degree in Indigenous Languages and Linguistics from Simon Fraser University and interviewed many speakers for the Hashagun language series. She is currently translating projects for the children of the Takhu Society.
And tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
So much more than we can see. Yet all there is in the universe inside of me. Look outside and forget yourself. Then look inside and you will see. Letting go of your vows.
this little sunny porch with a song called Infinity Inside from their new album that just released called The Sound of This Place. It was released last week. They will join us on a special Tuesday Juno afternoon next week, November 18th. So be sure to tune in. We'll have some live music and we'll talk about the creation of that album with Melanie and Marcus. That's next Tuesday, November 18th, right here on Juno Afternoon at 3 p.m. and then repeated at 7. You are listening to Community Supported KTOO on 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. You can also join us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. I am joined now by Amy Skillbred from Juno Community Foundation. Gunath Chi, Sha Igudi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio.
Well, Gunath Chi, it's great to be here.
Yeah, so. It's great. So now we have a bunch of things to talk about.
We do.
There's a lot of different topics. I gave a little bit in the intro about it, but it's National Philanthropy Day. There's also information coming up on the Feeding Juno Kids campaign. There's also giving deadlines and grant deadlines. I think I said grant deadlines in the intro, but it's also the end of the year. So there's like, we have to start thinking about our annual
donations.
Giving. Yeah, our donations that we're going to be making. Yeah. So where should we begin?
Let's begin with National Philanthropy Today.
Let's do it.
Because that's the day today is in Alaska. Not a holiday from work or school, but it's still a great day to give to your favorite nonprofits in Juneau, Southeast Alaska, wherever. It's basically a day that has been marked as a national, one of the national days. I think there's actually almost every day is some sort of different day.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah, there's Margarita Day, there's Chocolate Cookie Day, and there's Philanthropy Day.
And there's Philanthropy Day.
Yeah.
And so philanthropy is a really big word. I remember it being on like the SATs years ago. You had to know what it meant. But really, it just means giving to promote human welfare. Mm. And basically, the foundation is set up for two purposes, and it's to increase philanthropy, so increase giving, to meet the needs of our community. And it's been great because Juno is so philanthropic, and that involves people giving their time, all the volunteers in town, people giving their expertise, helping with things that they know about, helping other nonprofits or other people with it, and also giving money. So we look at all of those when we think of philanthropy.
So remind us, Amy, just a little bit about Juno Community Foundation, because you do a couple, you do a wide variety of things, but there's a couple different ways that that works. You manage funds, but then you also accept funds. Just describe it for those who may not know.
Yeah, we run the gamut. We mostly have been an organization that accepts donations to the Community Foundation and also to other organizations or other organizations' funds with us and to several funds that we have. One of the ones that we're some people may be getting a letter about soon and people will be hearing about is Feeding Juno Kids. So I'll take that as an example of one of about 100 different funds that we have. And so that one, people give to the Juno Community Foundation. We work with the school district and the Coast Guard and Southeast Food Bank to and Super Bear to get food and put them give them to funds to the Gatineau Human Services that is doing the weekend backpacks. Food is also purchased and provided in vacation bags to about 750 students for winter vacation, spring vacation, summer vacation. And Coast Guard delivers those. School district helps with organizing who gets them. And then we also support the school district counselors who, you know, they meet kids who just really need some food before they begin some conversation. So we provide food there. And also provide funds to support the school food programs. Used to do a lot with the Universal Breakfast Program and more recently doing more with kids who order lunch and get a lunch, but they don't have enough funds to pay for the entire lunch. And so helping to cover that. So
yeah, it's really interesting. We've had recently we've had the Resurrection Lutheran Church on. We've had The Glory Hall, and we've talked with St. Vincent de Paul, just a lot of food scarcity issues in town, and obviously this program specifically to help the kids.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so that's one example of a type of fund that we have. Mm-hmm. We also have agency endowments and stewardship funds. For example, KTOO has an endowment fund, a legacy fund with the Juneau Community Foundation. And there what we're doing is helping the nonprofits in town build funds that can support organizations into the future.
I see.
And that provides some funding every year so you can build it into the budget for the organization and be able to count on it.
So those funds like the KTO Legacy Fund, it's like you manage that money, you're investing that money, and then some of the returns might come back and become part of operating funds or whatnot, or to ensure the future for organizations.
Absolutely. And that's one of the sort of services that we offer because we are managing and investing endowment funds for the for community funds that we have generally, our Arts and Culture Fund, our Parks, Trails and Recreation Fund, Health and Social Services, and Youth and Education. We can also add in funds for organizations so that we can manage those. And we're already doing that. We have a really top-notch investment committee that oversees how we invest, and we're very simple in how we invest. We just invest in some domestic securities, some international ones, and then a treasury bond fund.
You're not day trading, basically.
No way. It turns out that our philosophy is to keep it really simple, and we're in there for the long term.
Yeah.
So you don't need to be moving things around. You might actually do more harm than good if you do that.
Yeah, for sure. So there's those kinds of funds, and then there's these programs that you're also supporting, like the Feeding Juneau Kids.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So there's just a variety of things that have to do with philanthropy, which you're basically saying means giving.
Yep.
And that's today. I know there's a conference up in Anchorage that's going today that people are meeting there about this kind of thing. And it's just to bring awareness, right, to the idea of, giving when you can. I know people can do it with their PFD. They can earmark things for certain funds, things like that. But as we approach the end of the year, Amy, I know there's like deadlines on different stuff. Like we want to go over a couple of those for people who might have that extra money. I know money's tight these days for a lot of folks.
Right.
But if you have the ability and you want to find a way to give your money to some of these very deserving organizations, how do we do that and where do we do that?
Yeah, and I'd say often there are a lot of people in Juneau who have made their living in Juneau and are really appreciative of where they live and want to make it a better place for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have deadlines for these things.
Always deadlines,
yes.
Huh?
So if someone's giving mutual funds that may have appreciated, we try and ask that they notify us by November 28th.
Mm-hmm.
Takes a little while because we have to work with financial institutions and move things around.
And this is all designed to get it into a donation before the end of the year so that people can deal with it on their taxes in the next year.
Yeah,
right?
And a lot of people do use, donations in order to get a tax break on them. The standard deductions are so high now that they're still, I think what motivates most people is just their generosity.
Right, okay.
The tax break is a bonus for a lot of people, especially higher income, So we also look at gifts of stock, and we're asking that those be initiated right about now. maybe next week is what we're looking at there.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it just takes a little time for people to contact their brokers to move it over to our funds and us to sell it. But as soon as we receive it, it's received. And so that works. And that's, people have done that for a lot of different organizations recently, just because the need is so great in town for different nonprofits. And because we're able to handle stock donations. So if people have appreciated stock, for example, I'll just use K2 because I'm sitting here with you.
Thank you.
And they want more funding for K2. They can send the stock to the Juno Community Foundation. Give us a call. We can accept it at one of our brokerage firms. And then we would sell it. And then we give that donation to KTOO.
I see. Okay.
So it's a way of us, another service that we provide basically for our partners, the nonprofits, and being able to help them out.
Mm-hmm.
Wire transfers of cash, you know, just up until the end of the, you know, well, again, and about December 17th, 18th, end of next week is when those would be good to get them initiated, just because it can take time.
Mm-hmm.
People who want to send a check, it just has to have a postmark of December 31st, which is interesting because there's not many postmarks on anything anymore. But that's what we've been told.
Mm-hmm.
Credit card gifts can be made through the Community Foundation's website, junocf.org, and those have to just happen before midnight on December 31st. So before the end of the year is the rule on those.
And it's great because when you go to junocf.org, which is your website, you have a list of all the different funds. So if people don't even know, maybe they want to explore, like, you know, I mean, obviously we're really appreciative here at K2O if you decide to give to the Legacy Fund. But there's so many, you know, Feeding Juno Kids. There's so many other organizations.
Oh, yeah.
There's arts groups. There's all kinds of different funds that are available. There's scholarship funds. There's all different things that you can give to. And you can see a list of all those at the website, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a lot there. And we also work with folks who are interested in leaving a legacy gift to Juno. Because the foundation is now large enough that we know that we're going to be around for a really long time.
Mm.
And so that is helpful for people because most people who are looking at putting something in their will or trust or estate plan, it's you're looking at doing it for it to happen sometime in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're here to help make that work and to follow what people wish to get done in the future.
I see. That's so great.
Yeah.
And are there, is there anything else that, in terms of giving deadlines, that I think we got them all in there pretty much?
Yeah. The last thing I would say is that there are tax changes that are coming in 2026, so beginning next year. And so people should talk to their financial advisors and see if there's something that they should do before the end of this year that might help them with those tax changes next year.
I see. Okay, yeah. that's interesting. And of course, we're talking about National Philanthropy Day, and also Feeding Juno Kids. Is there information on Feeding Juno Kids in terms of like that? Is it, because I know it began like a year or two ago. Was that right?
It's actually this is the fifth year. I think,
okay.
That we've been doing it.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And we started when we realized that vacation was coming up in the winter and there was nobody who was going to be providing food boxes for kids. And kids, there's a lot of kids in Juneau that get a fair amount of their food at school.
Mm-hmm.
And so when there's vacation, it can be hard. And so getting that out to kids is important. And so this year, Feeding Juno Kids, we have a $100,000 match going, and we'll match the first $100,000 that are donated. And
oh, wow.
It's been amazing. We've done that for 3 years, and we've made the match every year.
Oh, that's excellent.
It's amazing. Yeah. I mean, Juno is a really giving place. So.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Let me just put caveat, but in addition, it's cost about $197,000 a year in food that we've given out. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. Is there, just because I mentioned it, I'm just going to ask, are there grant deadlines that people need to be aware of, or are we in the middle of that period right now?
We don't have a grant that's ongoing right now.
Okay.
I think all of our grants have closed just because it's so close to the end of the year.
Yeah.
This gets to be a busier time for giving. We have grants that will be opening up early next year. And first ones out of the box are usually the scholarship funds.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Juno Hope Endowment CBJ social service grants.
Yeah, those are always awesome. But you'll be back to talk about those.
We will.
In the new year.
Definitely.
In 2026. Amy Skobrad, thank you so much, Gunathchish, for sharing this with us. It's it's Alaska Philanthropy Day, which is raising awareness on giving. It's your time of year to begin to think about what you might be able to give, if you can give. This is the time, and there's those deadlines. I think it's available on the website as well for people to see.
Yep.
And you can look at all the different funds that basically Juno Community Foundation manages, most of the city's groups and things like that. Go ahead.
One last thing. Yeah. I'd say, yeah, give generously to the nonprofits in town that you love and work with.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. So really appreciate you being here. Gunathchish, I really appreciate it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. And if you haven't heard, local restaurant Zerelda's Bistro is closing. After a decade of serving Juno a range of fresh foods and diverse flavors, the beloved restaurant is closing its doors later this month. Zerelda's was started by a couple who love food almost as much as they love each other. Yvonne Crumry, KTOO's reporter, has the story.
Abby and Jeremy Barnett opened Zerelda's together in 2016. It's named after Abby's grandmother, Zerelda LaForce, who fostered her love of cooking and baking. The restaurant originally started as Abby's dream. Jeremy didn't live in the state yet, but after the two met online, Jeremy was ready to join her in this dream. He moved to Alaska for her and the business.
I met her and I dropped everything. So I loved what she was doing. And I was like,
"And we fell in love.
I'll come help." And yeah.
Yeah, so. And we fell in love, and we just loved cooking together. And
we clicked.
Zerelda's debuted on the Juno food scene in a different location in the Valley with sit-down table service. A few years after opening, the couple decided to get married rather spontaneously. They didn't even close the restaurant.
We had whiskey, yep. And we ate El Zarape. And
shots and tacos.
And smoked ribs.
Ribs and...
And then it was hilarious. We opened for service 2 hours late.
Yeah.
Zerelda's moved to its current location in the Valley during the COVID-19 pandemic. The Barnetts turned what used to be a laundromat into a massive kitchen and bakery and shifted to a primarily to-go counter. Soon, the demand for their food tripled, and they said it took a few years to find their stride. But still, they prioritized fresh, local food and a diverse menu. It features decadent comfort food, like fried chicken and burgers, to veggie-forward noodle bowls and pho. New specials appear on the chalkboard almost daily, and cookies, pies, and croissants line the shelves of a case by the register. Abby Barnett says it's the product of the people in the back of the house.
We love to see what people's strengths are.
She says that while they've weathered rising costs and other fluctuations in the economy, it gave them the opportunity to be creative with their menu. She says they're closing for health reasons. In 2023, Jeremy had a severe heart attack, and since then, the couple has tried to find ways to step back from the restaurant without closing. But this fall, they decided it was time.
You know, it was a hard decision. It's emotional. It's like, this is all we know. You know, it's what we built together.
Abby says the hardest part for her is saying goodbye to her staff.
They're people that you've spent every day with for years and years and years, and you know, they're who like kept us going when we didn't think we could go anymore.
The Barnetts say they're seeking someone who's willing to take over the restaurant and have had some promising conversations so far. They're planning to close at the end of next week. In Juno, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com.
Hi, this is Jamie Waste. As K2 navigates the sudden loss of all federal funding, it is clear that larger gifts will play an essential role in K2's future. If you are in a position to make a significant gift by selling stock or using an IRA required minimum distribution or another method, we encourage you to do so before the end of 2025 when current tax benefits are set to change. Your generosity will sustain K2 as a driving force in our hometown. Thank you.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. We know it's the holidays, When you hear the familiar bell ring and the red kettles show up at our local supermarkets. They are run by the Salvation Army, and it's just one of the many things the group does for the holidays. I'm joined in studio now to learn more by Peter Janoszek from the Salvation Army, Officer Gunath Cheesh. Welcome in. Wasiati, how you doing?
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting us.
Of course. And I also have Alan Akiyama. And his son, Henry, who's also joining us in the studio today. And Alan, you're a board member.
That's correct. I'm a member of the Salvation Army Advisory Board. Been on the board for about 15 years.
Oh, excellent. Well, Gunath Cheesh for coming in. And hi, Henry. How are you, buddy?
Good.
Well, welcome in. It's nice to see you here. Thank you so much. I like your hat. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the various programs that we've been having everybody on recently to talk about all these wonderful programs. And I know that one of them is a big one that you all do is the Thanksgiving dinner. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Peter?
Yeah, sure. So Thanksgiving dinner, traditional, will be at the Yacht Club. Okay. It will be on Thanksgiving Thursday, 27th, from 11 morning till 1 o'clock. We count with about probably 250, maybe 300 people, including some of the deliveries, which will be made by some of our partners from different churches around Juneau. And there is no need of registration. People can just show up and be served the full dinner, like turkey and mashed potato and stuffing and everything what you consider to be a full Thanksgiving dinner.
All the yummy stuff.
Exactly. Plus the dessert. I believe there will be some dessert, drinks, and maybe one more thing I would like to say that people who have a problem to get there, because I know it's kind of a little tricky to get there on like walking, so we will have a van which will be available in front of our church, which is 439 Willoughby Avenue. And if people will need a ride to the venue and back, we will provide that.
Oh, that's excellent. Okay. And that's from 11 to 1 on Thanksgiving.
Yes, 27th of November.
And if people need a ride, they can get picked up at 439 Willoughby.
Yes, which is across the street from our thrift store.
Okay, great. Which people know is right across from Foodland. Yeah, that's excellent. And that is a full Thanksgiving dinner. How many people do you typically serve?
We are prepared for 300.
Oh, wow.
And there is a lot of volunteers involved. When I saw it for the first time last year, it was very well-functioning machine.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just delivering food, and they took care of everything. And there is also a lot of sponsors and people who are helping, like preparing the stuffing or smoking the turkeys. A lot of those things are done by local businesses, and we're very thankful for all this support.
Well, you were mentioning it was going to be my next question, is if people want to volunteer to help out, how do they go about doing that?
They can go to the Salvation Army webpage. There is all contacts. They can call me. And we have a coordinator, Victoria Gotkin, and she is coordinating all the volunteers. And I think we will need probably more volunteers for another event, which you already mentioned. This is the Red Kettle Campaign.
Okay, yeah, we'll get to that in just a second. And, of course, the website, juno.salvationarmy.org, is the website. It's the place to go to find out all of the things we're talking about with the Salvation Army today. There are also a couple other websites that we'll give out here in a second on some of these other programs. But the Thanksgiving dinner is coming up on November 27th from 11 to 1.
And everyone is welcome.
Everyone welcome. No registration needed.
Just show up.
That's fantastic. What a wonderful community event. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned it, the Red Kettle Campaign. When does that kick off?
We will be starting the 1st of December.
Okay.
Because there is a Thanksgiving dinner, then there is a public market where we are very much involved as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically there is no time for us to do everything.
Yeah.
So we start in the 1st of December,
okay,
running all the way through the 24th of December. And there will be four main locations, which are the four supermarkets here, Foodland, Fred Meyer's, Super Bear, and Safeway. Mm-hmm. And people still can register to volunteer for us to ring the bell. And the webpage is very easy, registertoring.com. They will just put Juno, find out the spot, and sign up for that, and we will take care of the rest.
And you need a lot of people, I would assume, because the shifts are a couple hours long, I would imagine.
We prefer people to sign up at least for 2 hours.
2 hours.
Two hours, because it's gonna take a long time to ride along the whole, I mean, the whole loop. Mm-hmm. And if it is just 1 hour, we will not be able to exchange everyone and all the time.
Right.
So at least 2 hours. But there is still a lot of places empty. And we have several organizations. We have Rotary Club, Lions Club are supporting us, and they are ringing the bells. Some companies with their employees, they are coming and supporting some churches. So, yeah. It's
That's
still
excellent.
Possible.
And Alan, you said you've been on the advisory board for about 15 years. How have you seen the Red Kettle campaign, you know, morph over the years?
Well, I think that through time, particularly during the pandemic, it was difficult to get volunteers mm-hmm. To man all the kettles at different time slots or at the stores. So we encourage people who are interested to please sign up. In the past, we've even had some of the local high school sports teams sign up and take a day or a shift at some of the stores. So just any organization, or a lot of times just families mm-hmm. will take a shift so that they can do as a family together, or some people even will bring their friends, and they'll have a musical shift. They'll play music.
Play some music, right?
Play that some music.
Fun.
During the shift.
That's kind of cool. So it's not a solo adventure. You can actually bring your teenager or your young children, and it's a great way to teach them about what the giving back is.
We will have even a group of children from Thunder Mountain School because one of our members of the church is a teacher there, so she will bring the group of kids, and they will be ringing the bells for us. And so, yes, I think it's a great opportunity for kids to see that there is a way how to support the community. Because all the money, I just want to say that all the money are staying here in Juneau.
Oh, yeah,
so
that's great.
So it will continue to support the community.
That's wonderful. So it all stays here in the community. I love that. And the other thing that's interesting is I know that not as many people, you know, a lot of folks don't carry cash anymore. Everybody's all digital. So does the Red Kettle accept Square or Venmo or what?
Yeah. We have a way, and on every location there will be always QR code. And you just scan the QR code, and it will take you directly to the webpage of the Salvation Army in Juneau. And there is a way how to donate.
Okay.
We call it a virtual Red Kettle.
A virtual Red Kettle. Yeah, because there has to be a way to do that, right? Or just make sure that if you're out shopping these holidays, make sure you have some jack in your jeans, as they say. Get some change in there, get some dollar bills in there, maybe even a 20 or a 50 or a 100.
By the way, maybe if I can add, because every kettle has a big sign, Salvation Army Red Kettle Campaign, and on that sign is that QR code.
Okay.
And even though there is no bell ringing right now, because maybe there is an empty spot and no one signed up for that sign will still stay in front of the supermarket.
Okay.
So people can scan the code even if there is no one right now ringing, and they still can donate.
I see. Okay. And then, Alan, maybe you can tell me a little bit about, I know we're talking about Thanksgiving, but can we move forward to the holiday and talk a little bit about the holiday food boxes? What is that program?
Well, I'll let Peter talk about that, but I want to mention also that we have a longstanding tradition that we have a booth at the Juneau Public Market. We call it Grandma's Attic. And so the nicer donations that we get all throughout the year, we'll set aside and then we'll sell them at Grandma's Attic. So it's right near the front entrance. You can't miss us. And again, all the money that we raise at Grandma's Attic during Juneau Public Market stays right here in Juneau for the Salvation Army's programs.
Oh, that's so excellent.
Stop by our booth as we sell stuff. We get new stuff out. So if you don't see something one day, come back the next day. We might have something that you like the next day.
I see. So, and this is all the donations that people bring to the Salvation Army.
We are separating things of higher value and nicer stuff or things with some sometimes cultural value, mm-hmm. and we try to sell it at the public market because we think it's better place to sell than in the thrift store.
I see. Okay, excellent. So, Peter, you can tell me about the Christmas and holiday food boxes.
Yes. It is very much connected with the Angel Tree program because people can sign up for a food box, which is for Christmas, including full turkey or ham if they prefer to have a ham, it's possible. They can apply through the Angel Tree program, even though they don't have a kids, because that's another thing which we may be talking about. But the food boxes are, we will be distributing them the 20th of December. People can come every Thursday between 4 to 6 to the Salvation Army to apply for them on paper, just showing up and fill the application. Or they can go to the webpage saangeltree.org. SA like Salvation Army, saangeltree.org, and apply there. So the food box event is always in cooperation with some sponsors and mainly with the Women of the Moose Club. Okay. They are very heavily supporting this event and they are organizing almost everything.
I appreciate that. I'll give all these websites again. Just last question for you, Alan. You've been on this advisory board for 15 years. Why do you stay on the board? What's important to you about Salvation Army?
Well, my late mother, Grace Ebihara Akiyama, was involved with the Salvation Army Auxiliary for years. And after my parents both passed, I was asked by one of the board members, who's a friend of mine, to attend one of the meetings and see if I liked it. I attended the meeting. I thought, this might be a good way to give back to the community. The community of Juneau has been so good to my family that I want to give back to the community. This seemed to be a good way to help give back. So that's why I joined the board, and that's why I've stayed on the board.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. Salvation Army, you do so much for the community of Juneau. As Peter mentioned, all the money raised stays here in Juneau for the programs that the Salvation Army does. You can find out about the all of the information that we're talking about here at juneau.salvationarmy.org. Again, it's a Thanksgiving dinner, November 27th at the Yacht Club from 11 to 1. There's information on being picked up if you don't have a ride. There's the Red Kettle Collection that's going to begin December 1st, which is going to be an awesome way to give back this year. You can also volunteer to ring the bell at registertoring.com. And then, of course, the holiday program, food boxes, and the Angel Tree program. You can find out more and sign up at saangeltree.org. Alan, Henry, and Peter, thank you so much for coming in and sharing with us everything that's going on at the Salvation Army. And one more question real quick. If people want to give, is there days that you accept stuff at the – I'm talking about like items. What's the best day to bring things to Salvation Army?
There are two different things. First, for the thrift store, it's only on Saturday morning. Most people know that. But if people would like to donate for the Angel Tree program, gifts for kids, they can connect with us. And most of the working days from Monday till Friday, they can bring them to the Salvation Army Church, again, across the street from the thrift store.
Okay.
Better is call before because we'll be very busy running around.
It's a busy time of year for the Salvation Army.
Yes.
We appreciate all you do. Yes, Alan?
The thrift store takes donations every Saturday beginning at 10 a.m. in the morning. And we'll take donations till container vans are full or until about 2 o'clock.
Okay, excellent. That's so good. Thank you so much, Alan, Henry, and Peter from the Salvation Army for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you,
Boston.
Gwyneth Cheesh. Now, up next, we're going to listen to this week's Our Living Lands from Native Voice One. This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO.
This is Our Living Lands, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Climate change is causing severe impacts on indigenous communities in the Pacific. Anita Hofschneider reports on these issues, including sea level rise and fires for Grist. Our Living Lands producer Daniel Spalding spoke to Hofschneider about her work.
Can you talk about the ways that climate change is impacting Indigenous people in the Pacific that might be a bit different from other Indigenous communities on the mainland?
You know, when people think of climate change in the Pacific, the first thing that really comes to mind is sea level rise. And that's true. You know, rising seas are affecting low-lying atolls in places like the Marshall Islands and Tuvalu. But at the same time, it's not just sea level rise. You also have stronger storms that bring heavy rains and landslides in places like Vanuatu. I grew up in the Mariana Islands, and although a lot of people there are used to typhoons, there have been worsening storms and more frequent storms. Another effect is warming waters and the way that the warming waters are bleaching coral reefs and how that affects fish and tourism economies. There's also concern about worsening wildfires as well as how climate change could affect freshwater availability in the future.
You've done a lot of reporting on the Maui fires, and the fires were 2 years ago, but the impacts are far from over for many families. Can you tell us about what you've learned families are still dealing with?
So I did a story recently where I interviewed a Native Hawaiian homeowner in Lahaina called Mikey Burke. So Burke was, you know, very lucky to escape with her family, but now she's in the process of trying to rebuild her home and prevent it from going into foreclosure. And so Mikey is trying to hold on to that property so that it can be a place where her children and her children's children can always call home. But it's definitely a very uncertain moment. I did speak with a nonprofit on Maui that was saying that they had dozens of homeowners, 78 homeowners that they worked with, who had missed mortgage payments and were at risk of foreclosure on Maui, largely because they have been trying to pay rent while also waiting to rebuild their homes.
I also wanted to ask about your reporting on the possibility of deep sea mining in the American Samoa. Can you explain the situation there?
So back in April, Trump issued an executive order intended to jumpstart the nascent deep sea mining industry. And the Interior Department launched a process to lease out the seabed surrounding American Samoa. And so what was interesting about this was that the people of American Samoa came out very strongly against deep sea mining. Every single major political leader in American Samoa said no. You know, their economy relies very heavily on fisheries. They're concerned about what the potential impacts might be to their fisheries. And although the company that I spoke with, Impossible Metals, that is, you know, pursuing deep sea mining in their waters, says that their technology would mean there'd be very little environmental harm, the community is still skeptical and is still worried. But what they're finding is that because of their status as a U.S. territory, that compared to other countries in the Pacific that have, independence, they are subject to the U.S. Department of Interior's process, and that is still moving ahead, and it's possible that the mining could take place over their objections.
You report on Indigenous stories across the Pacific Islands. What are some of the things that you would want to highlight for our listeners about the region that they might not know?
One thing that your listeners may not necessarily realize is that what happens in the Pacific does affect what happens in the continental U.S. or the Pacific Northwest. You know, when there are typhoons in a place like Guam, or when there are wildfires on Maui, or when atolls are sinking underneath the ocean, and people end up thinking, where do I go? And what does this mean for me and my family? And oftentimes that leads to migration. And so you have growing Pacifica communities in the Pacific Northwest and in the U.S. mainland in general. And so while that is a strength to have more cultural diversity in our communities, it also can be something that evokes a lot of grief among Indigenous peoples who are, you know, forced to move somewhere new and aren't able to raise their families in the homes that they have always, the places they have always called home. And so I think that, to me, what that underscores is just how interconnected everything is, that even when climate impacts are being felt very far away, there are additional impacts that kind of reverberate across the country and across the world that really underscore that we should pay attention to this critically important issue.
Tune in next week for more stories about how climate change affects tribal communities. I'm Antonia Gonzalez for Our Living Lands, a collaboration of Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, Native Public Media, and the Mountain West News Bureau.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson. I am your host, Boston Christopher. Mudrooms, Juno's storytelling event, is in the midst of their season. Maybe you've always wanted to sign up and tell a story, but are a little hesitant or worried about your quote-unquote performance. Well, this Sunday, the group is offering a workshop geared towards working on stage presence. It's Sunday, November 16th from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Konekidi Northern Light Church. The group is also doing another round of their very popular edition of Mudrooms that they've named Smut Rooms. What is that exactly, and how can you participate? Well, I've got board members Taylor Beard and Anne-Marie Elder to break it down for us. Gunath Chisha, Yedi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you both in the studio on this lovely Friday afternoon.
Thank you.
Gunath Chisha.
Yeah, Gunath Chisha. So let's first start with this workshop, because I feel like, Anne-Marie, that is one thing that does stop folks from maybe signing up. I mean, I think I've mentioned this many times when Mudrooms has been on, but years ago when I was a younger person, I saw a study and it said that the number one fear over death is public speaking. Some people just don't want to get up in front of people, and probably their stage presence is part of that. Tell me a little bit about this workshop, why you're offering it.
Well, it's really about overcoming performance anxiety.
Oh, okay.
And so I'm going to offer some tools that people can put in their toolbox. Everybody's a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has different fears. Their level of fears can be very different. So people will respond to different ways of working with anxiety.
Interesting.
And try to calm down and get over your fear. So, and it's not just so that you could share a story at Mudrooms. It's so that you can speak in front of a small group, large group, whatever. Because we all have those opportunities.
Yeah, it's funny. I've been in performance a lot, most of my life. And I tell people that even today, the moments before the show begins, I'm always nervous. Right? Or I have anxiety about the performance, right? And it is interesting because, we just heard something in the other room. That was very loud in here. It probably wasn't on air, but anyway, the world isn't crashing down on us, hopefully. But performance anxiety, that's a big thing. And I feel like there's something about, like you said, a lot of people experience it in different ways. What are some of those ways that people might experience it differently?
Some people might just get the jitters.
Mm.
Like you said, just some anxiety, you know, some nervousness before you get up. But for some people, this holds them from participating and from sharing. And maybe from sharing their story at Mudrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And yet Mudrooms is one of the easiest places to go and share in front of a large group. Because I feel like, and this is the reason why I love it so much, because I feel like people in Juno, we love to hear those stories. And we have such an accepting audience that even if someone gets up there and they hesitate or they can't remember or they, you know, maybe they fall apart and just start crying, our audience, our people in Juno, just want to see them do well. So part of this anxiety is that you're going to be judged.
Yes.
But this is a great place for you to come if you want to share. Mudrooms is because, you know, we're probably the most non-judgmental group in town. You know,
the audience is so accepting.
Yeah,
right?
They're so accepting.
Really,
it's the warmth and the heart and just the community aspect of sharing your story. And even if you were to forget something or, you know, nobody's going to be like, oh, you're terrible or, oh, why did you mess up?
Yeah. I swear the audience is like sending like you go vibes.
The good vibes.
Yeah. They're sending them at those storytellers like, you got this. And it's a good place to share.
But, you know, also a lot of people have to perform in different ways. Maybe you're a student that has to give some sort of talk or maybe you really want to be an actor.
Mm. And, or a job interview.
Yeah, or even a job interview. There's or even if you're just talking to your team that you're coaching. Mm-hmm. You know, we all have to speak in public in some ways. And so if this is something that's very difficult for you, this is the workshop for you.
And again, it's 3 to 5 p.m. this Sunday, November 16th at the Konekidi Northern Light Church, which is where Mudrooms happens as well. Everybody mm-hmm. knows the church. So what kind of things, if I sign up for this workshop, do I have to sign up, A?
We encourage it just so I know how many to prepare for. But honestly, if you just want to show up, that's fine too.
But you can sign up.
And it's free.
It's free, which is always good. Yeah. Mudrooms.org is mm-hmm. the place to go to find it. You can see the whole calendar of all the things going on there. And so what can I expect to happen on Sunday? What's going to be going on in the workshop?
Well, I'm going to be offering a number of different tools for people to, you know, put in the back of their mind. Because for some people, you just need to learn how to breathe.
Mm.
And then I've heard Taylor actually offer some of our other storytellers different suggestions, like as they're preparing their story.
Mm.
But you're not expected to tell a story at Mudrooms just because you took this workshop.
No.
It's really just about helping you as a person, and you want to share your life with other people. Or maybe it's something that you have to do for work.
Yeah. Yeah.
School.
There's a thing that I used to do. I sometimes still do it, but I just do a little it's a breath exercise, right?
Yeah.
Make a little triangle with your hands, and you just imagine inhaling as you run up the hill, exhaling as you go down the hill, and then you're taking a moment as you cross back over to do that again. And you just sort of, so it gives you the sense of taking the time to have a full breath,
mm-hmm.
because I think that gets into you get choked up when you can't take a breath, right?
Yeah, sure. And it's cyclical because then you keep that cycle going when you're even on stage. So.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And then there was an actor I knew once. His name's Glenn Morshower. He's an actor who is known for playing the most authoritative figures in movies. Like he's played always the commander or the chief or the whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he used to give this talk. And he would tell people, you know, you've heard the thing about like put something in your shoe or put a rock in your shoe. This is all leading up to talking about smut rooms. I'm transitioning right now.
Okay.
And one of the things he recommended to people is to maybe put some marshmallows in your backside so that you're not actually thinking about what the audience is doing. You're just sort of imagining. So you have something else to focus on.
Oh, man. No.
But then, you know, I don't know if it should be marshmallows because marshmallows melt.
Yeah.
And so that might be a sticky situation. But.
Oh, God, that would be awful.
So I don't know. I don't have a full story about that I can tell at Smut Rooms, but let's talk a little bit about Smut Rooms. So the workshop mm-hmm. is happening this Sunday.
Yeah.
It's about performance anxiety and stage presence and all that good stuff. It's going to be at the Northern Light United Church November 16th from 3 to 5. Go sign up at mudrooms.org or just show up.
And
Anne Marie's going to lead you through some cool exercises. Yeah. So Mudrooms normally is 7 minutes, seven people for $7 telling a story that mm-hmm. they have encountered. But last year, you all had this idea to have an adult version, at-night version, mm-hmm. a past 10 o'clock version or something.
Kind of like the after-dark version.
After-dark version, where you could tell things about marshmallows in your backside and things like that. But tell me a little bit about what's happening this year with Smut Rooms.
So this year, our theme is hot takes and hot toddies. And last year was so popular that we were turning people away at the door. And so this year, we are trying to recruit enough storytellers that are either willing to tell the story twice or enough storytellers to have two different shows, because we want to have two shows in the same night so that it's not so packed and everybody has a chance to come, because I think we turned away 50 plus people last time. And there were a lot of people trying to get in and it was really packed. And so we don't want it to be quite so packed, because I know there were people that were uncomfortable having to stand for such a long time, and there was just not a lot of room to move. And so we kind of want to avoid that this time. So that's why we're trying to recruit earlier. But I want people to come sign up to tell smut to me. Please come tell me smut.
And define for us again what smut is, because I think some people immediately think of, you know, things that are a little too naughty to talk about on the radio.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Like, what does that mean to you all?
So yeah, people immediately go to sex mm-hmm. with smut, but it isn't just sex. It can be anything that is considered one of the vices. So last year we went with the seven deadly sins, and this year we're going with a little bit different thing, but really. It can be any story that is like a terrible rumor that you heard or that went around about you that played telephone that just ended up being hilarious and obscene or, you know, stories with spice that make you sweat. My friend said it could be stories about bedroom fantasies that turned into reality and where those went. It can be any number of things. And so, you know, there have been stories about drugs before. There have been stories about I had a friend who didn't tell the story, but she had like a – we'll just say her – an incident with a toilet that exploded on her, and it was hilarious. And I wish she would have told it, but she didn't end up doing it. But
last year there was a great story about jealousy.
Oh, man, that was – yeah, mm-hmm. that was a good story. But yeah, I think a lot of people assumed it was going to be solely on sex, and mm-hmm. it wasn't solely on sex, but it was still a great show. So, we just want any stories that are maybe a little bit, what's the word? I can't even come up with.
Well, it's like things you wouldn't, you wouldn't say at your Thanksgiving dinner table.
Yes, exactly.
Right? It's the things that you, how about this? Maybe it's this way. It's the things you're not going to talk to your mom about, probably. Right,
probably.
Unless your mom's into that sort of thing, which you never know. But like, it's the things that you wouldn't tell in polite company, as
polite
they used
company.
To say.
The
right?
things you wouldn't want recorded for the radio, because we're not going to record the
you
show
don't record
for the radio.
Those. Because you do play the normal mudrooms on KTOO.
Right.
Those shows do air here, but these will not.
These will not. No.
Yeah. They so it's all, you got to be there in person to mm-hmm. hear the story. And you need a lot of performers to sign up.
We would love a lot of performers to sign up. We're trying to at least reach 10 performers that way that if we do two shows and nobody wants to perform twice, we have 5 storytellers per show.
And when are we planning to do this particular show?
It'll be January 16th at the Crystal.
January 16th at the Crystal. So if mm-hmm. you're available to tell a story on January 16th, the best thing to do is contact Mudrooms. Go to mudrooms.org. Is that where you sign up?
Mm-hmm. It's just the normal sign-up sheet that we have. So.
Okay. And what's the topic again?
It is hot takes and hot toddies.
Hot takes?
Hot takes, yeah.
Hot takes and hot toddies. Oh, man, that gives a lot of
Because I think that we're
ideas.
Even going to have like a signature drink that night. So,
Oh, I see. Okay. That's kind of fun.
It'll be fun. Yeah.
That's excellent. Well, Mudrooms is the fantastic Juno storytelling event. There's a couple events coming up. And when's the next regular Mudrooms?
December 9th.
Okay.
Yeah, December 9th. Yeah.
So
Tuesday,
you'll all
December.
Be back to talk a little bit about that and preview that in December. But for now, it's the Performance Anxiety Workshop happening November 16th. That's this Sunday from 3 to 5 at the Northern Light United Church, as well as looking for performers for Smut Rooms for mm-hmm. January 16th.
Yes. Please sign up. We need you. Because the other benefit is if we have two shows, that's more money that goes to our beneficiary.
Ah, I see. Okay, excellent. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, Anne-Marie Taylor, for coming in and sharing with us about Mudrooms. Always go to mudrooms.org for more information. Gunnath Cheesh for being here.
Gunnath Cheesh. Thanks.
That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. We are Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTO 104.3 Juno and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. We will have a special show next Tuesday featuring Sunny Porch. Melanie and Marcus will be here to talk about their new album. You can find the show online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon. Live stream archives on KTOO's YouTube page. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Programming support comes from listeners and viewers like you. plus Alaska Airlines, Club 49, Hanson Grass, and Heritage Coffee Roasting Company. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gonna cheese!